Yes, I'm happy to see all these happy faces. I see most of the happy faces. But I hope I give you a smiling face today, right? Now, how many of you have read this book? Raise your hand. Not so many. Well, I got an assignment for you tonight. Go home and read the book. Okay? It will take you a long time. It's only four chapters. Okay, it's only four chapters. And I always have trouble. I'm sorry, I've been a Christian over 30 years. I always have trouble finding this book. I don't know why. Because it seems out of place. It's like, it's a love story. Okay, it's a love story, four chapters long. But it's somehow stuck in between 1 Samuel and Judges. And that doesn't seem to be the right place to look for it. I always try to look for it near Psalms, Proverbs, and, you know. So look for it between after Judges and before 1 Samuel. Please read it. It's a love story. Okay? But today, I'm not talking about love story. I mean, I know you guys would want to hear about love stories, especially for a girl that is eight. Let's hear about love stories. But, no, that's not why. Maybe I'm stuck in one wire. No? That's how it is? Alright. When it gets boring, it will dim and you guys fall asleep. You know? Anyway, the title is A Life Got Touched. A life got touched. Now, a lot of times we think about touching, right? You know, when I grew up in Hong Kong, you would see girls after school holding hands, you know, touching you, holding hands, walking down the street. And you would see boys, you know, grabbing their shoulders and walking down the street. And I don't think you want to do that these days, right? Touching, I love to shake hands with other people. Because when I shake hands, I can feel, you know, a connection with a person. Okay? Some handshakes are strong. Some handshakes are kind of wishy-washy. It's like he wants to shake your hand, he doesn't want to shake your hand. But still, you know, I feel the connection. Okay? But touching is not just physical. When you read a story, when you watch a movie, and you start crying, right? You're touched by the movie. Now, that I don't understand. To me, I always go to see movies to get entertained. I don't understand why you want to go to a movie and cry. All right? I can think of many other ways you can cry. So go paying to go to the movie. But it's true, right? When you read a book, when you go to the movie, you move, you cry, you're touched, right, by the story. How does God touch a life? How does God touch a life? I think we have a misconception, personally, I have a misconception. When I see someone, wow, you know, everything is great with him, he's getting a lot of blessings, you know, he's smart, he's good looking, he's popular, she is popular, she's like getting A's in all her classes, all the teacher loves her. Wow, God really touched her life. God really touched his life. Is that how you think? Everything goes well, smoothly, you get whatever you want. And you had a good relationship with your family. Does that mean that God has really touched your life? You know, here's the story, Ruth, right? Ruth, Naomi. Definitely, God touched her life. But what were they encountering? What did they have to deal with? Difficulty. Trouble. Alright? So even though it is a story about love and compassion, about loyalty and faithfulness, about respect and responsibility, it's basically a story about lives that God touched in the times of trouble. Lives that God touched in times of trouble. So how does God touch a life? How does God touch your life? God is the potter, right? Molding the clay. God is the potter molding the clay for his purpose. Through trials and tribulations, through joy and tears, and through satisfaction and disappointment. Teaching us how to trust in him. Teaching us how to learn to know him better. So, it's a dynamic process. You guys are fairly young, right? It's a dynamic process. It's a lifelong relationship with God. It's a lifelong search for God. He touches your life because he wants to mold you to the way he wants you to. Now, we heard the story. There was a famine, right? In the day of Judges, a famine. A man brought his wife and his two sons and to live for a while in a foreign land. I think we would be familiar with that type of feeling, especially the old, you know, for us who are older. You know, we come old from overseas. We immigrated into this country. So there was a famine. You know, things are tough. Things were tougher in the Orient, in Hong Kong or China or Taiwan, wherever your parents were from. And they decided, like I decided, to move over here. When you move to some place, you don't know whether you're going to stay for a long time or a short while. These people, the man and the wife, turned out to be Naomi, they just figured they went to live for a while in Moab. Well, a little while turned out to be over 10, 15 years, right? And for a while, things were good because in the verse 21, you know, Naomi said, I went away full. When they first got there, they had good things. But unfortunately, her husband died. Naomi's husband died. And she was left with her two sons. They married Moabite's woman, Orpah and Ruth. So, they lived for another about 10 years. The sons died. And so Naomi was left with the two daughters-in-law. Now, I don't know if you had gone through hard times. I don't know what you considered hard times for you. Maybe a fight with your parents. Maybe a fight with your friends, your best friend. Jonathan, what do you think their hard times are? Oh, okay. They lose a video game. Yeah, because my son Jonathan, right, he's a senior in high school. You know, he doesn't have too much time playing these online games, war games, right? And then he would come home and for 15, 20 minutes he would play, and I would hear screaming and yell. All right? Like his father is doing something wrong, you'll be, you know, that's hard times, right? But for Naomi, her hard time was losing her husband and her two sons. She lost her loved one. Now, very interesting, right? God loved Naomi. And yet, she was put into this situation. She lost her husband and she lost her children, her son. All she had was the two daughters-in-law. The one that God loved, he put her through tests of adversity. It's interesting. Seems like God is putting her through to try to find out what she was made of. Because adversity reveals the core of the person. Adversity reveals the core of the person. Any successful person went through adversity. Without adversity, without the baptism by fire, you wouldn't be made of anything good. My son John, he's applying for college, and he was writing an essay, right? And in the essay, he was talking about his hockey team last year. This is by Griffin. He had never played competitive hockey. He skated until he was 7th grade and stopped. So he hadn't skated for 3-4 years. Okay? And his friend said, hey, the school team need a goalie. So can you be our goalie? So for the summer, he started getting ready. Okay? Because he's never played hockey. He's never played goalie for hockey. So there was another goalie on the same team, but that other goalie wasn't as committed as John, okay? So he ended up not going to come to practice. So the first game, the coach started John without any experience. Without any experience. And they were playing the top team of the conference. Of course, he got killed, right? John got killed. And in his essay, he said, I felt like I was, you know, under a barrage of shots, right? Rubber puck after rubber puck shooting at me. It was like baptism by fire. But through this adversity, he started feeling the flow of the game. He started feeling confident. And that really helped him the rest of the season. Without facing adversity, guys, if you have trouble, you can't run away from it. You have to face it. Because adversity reveals what you are made of. Now, you heard about the story, right? The three little pigs and the big bad wolf? Well, Uncle Felix is a big bad wolf, right? There's one little pig, he built his house with straw. The second little pig, who was busy playing, they built the house with sticks. And then this little pig, who was conscientious, and built it with bricks, right? So he was warning the other two pigs, hey, don't play, come on, you got to permit your house. They didn't listen to him, and here comes the big red wolf, and he blew it down, right? You guys seen it, the story? I'm not sure, because you guys, you know, watch Nickelodeon and whatever is different, you know, than what we used to watch, all right? So anyway, those two houses were gone. And they ran to the third pig's home. And the big red wolf came and had blown, and it was brick, right? He couldn't get in. So eventually he tried to go through the chimney, and there was a big pot of hot water waiting for the wolf. Alright? But the lesson, right, is to prepare. Be conscientious. Don't just go through life. Be prepared for adversity. Adversity will come, okay? You will run into trouble. But the thing to do is to be prepared and build up your faith in God. Build up your faith in Jesus so that when adversity comes, you know how to deal with it. You know how to count on for help. Adversity will come. Unless we prepare for it, we're going to be in trouble. Okay? And the way to prepare for it is to build up your faith on God and to realize that our help is with God. In Psalm 73, it says, "This God is the strength of our heart." God is the strength of our heart. If we do not have the strength from God, then we cannot deal with adversity. I'm sure Naomi, she prayed, right? When she was under this adversity, she prayed, what am I going to do? Then she heard, all right? She heard that verse 6. She heard in Moab that the Lord had come to the aid of his people by providing food for them. She decided to go home, to go back to Judah. She prayed. she asked for guidance. What am I going to do? What should I do? I'm an institution. I'm just with my two daughters-in-law. What do I do? Always ask God to help you. Have faith, but the strength in our heart, that is God, comes because we ask God for help. A lot of times, right, when you have homework, that's something you're familiar with. You look at a problem, you say, oh, it's too hard, I can't do it. And you go to the next problem. How often does that occur? No? No? I see that very often, okay? With my kids I help at church, right? They come to a problem, they look at it, a minute, 2 minutes, I don't know how to do this. Next problem. Alright? Oh, I know how to do this. Work that problem. Comes another problem. No, I don't know how to do it. They wouldn't think, try to go to the problem again and think, instead of attacking it this way, maybe I could solve it. I'm talking about math now, right? Going the other way, writing another equation. Okay? That is, give up too easily, guys. You give up too easily. You can't. In life, you have to persevere. You have to hang in there. If you have a problem that you can't solve the first time, think. God gives you a brain, right? No matter whether big or small, you have a brain. Okay? God gives some people a bigger brain than yours, right? But then God also gives some other people a smaller brain than yours. You don't have the smallest brain. Use it. I always tell my students, use your brain. Just think. And don't give up. You know, go back to it. Think about it. How am I going to do it? God will help you. You know, overcoming adversity is like getting sick. Your parents always tell you. The doctor always tells you. Everybody gets sick. But once you get sick, right, you have some immunity that helps your body to fight the next virus. Adversity, the same thing. Don't run away from it. Because God wants to find out who and what you're made of, who you are and what you're made of. God wants us to know. He knows. God knows who we are. God knows who we're made of. But God wants you to know what you're made of. God wants you to find out who you are. So they went home, the two daughters-in-law and Naomi. On the way home, Naomi said to the two daughters, go back, each of you, to your mother's home. May the Lord show kindness to you as you have shown to your to the dead and to me. Go home. You don't find it interesting? I found it very interesting. They were already on the way home, right? On the way back to Judah. Why, all of a sudden, Naomi would say, you guys go home, I'll go alone. Naomi brought the two daughters-in-law for herself, thinking that it's good for her, thinking it's good for them, because then they would find a food, the Lord's provision, in their home. But then, on the way there, something bothered her. I'm not sure if something bothering me now because I see people talking. So anyway, something bothered her because, well, what am I doing this for? Am I doing this for myself? Or am I doing it for the two daughters-in-law? Because they're not from Judah, they're from Moab. So when she asked them to leave, she did so willingly but reluctantly. Because it is for her good, it is for her good to be having the two daughters-in-law with her. But then again, it is for the daughter, in her mind, it is for the daughters-in-law's good when they are with the people. They're with the people. So she was thinking about it. She was thinking what she should do. Now, a life got touched. A life got touched. Touches other people. A life got touched touches other people's lives. You know, you don't live in the world alone. You don't live in the world alone. You have people around you. How often do we think about other people? Naomi wasn't thinking about herself. She was thinking about the good of her daughters-in-law. It is better for them to stay with their people. It is harder for me. It is harder for me to be by myself in Judah. But at the end, it is better for the two young daughters-in-law to be with her people, with their people. So she decided to tell them, go ahead. Go ahead and go home. I will go back to Judah alone, all by myself. Test of sacrifice. Test of sacrifice. A life touched by God touches other people's lives. What kind of infant? John always say I have a, you know, foreign language. Influence. Influence, right? Influence. What kind of influence do you have on people around you? How often do we think for the benefit of other people that we're willing to sacrifice for the other people around us? Family, closest to us, our family, our friends in school, the brothers and sisters in church, or ordinary friends, ordinary people. When have we thought about sacrificing for others? Now, we always say we learn from Christ, right? The best example was Christ dying on the cross for us, giving his life for all of us, shedding his blood. It's a sacrifice. But, you know, we talk about sacrifice, and there's no action because there's no love. Unless we have God's love in our heart, unless Naomi has the love for the daughters-in-law in her heart, she wouldn't be thinking about that. So the important thing for us to think about, all right, when we talk about sacrificing, is first, think about what's in our heart. Do we have God's love in our heart? Do we touch by God? If our lives are touched by God, we have God's love in our heart. And the matter is whether we ignore it or we listen to it. If we listen to God's love in our heart, then we'll be alright. The problem is we don't listen to it. We try to listen to ourselves. So remember, test of adversity, don't run away from it. Test of sacrifice. What are we willing to give up for the people we love? So Naomi was sincere about asking them to go home. And Ruth and all of her, they decided to stay with them. And they were sincere. Naomi then again said, return home, my daughter. Why would you come with me? I'm not going to have any more fun, right? And even if I get married today, you'll have to wait 20, 25 years to have another husband. That's the tradition, right? They waited for, you know, they marry in family. So, how long do they wait? Are you going to wait 25 years to get married again, to be provided for? That's the reality. That's the reality they face. The third test that we go through in life is the test of reality. We all like to compare. We all like to compare with other people. For those who are working, oh, he has a better job, she has a better job. For us in school, right, younger? Well, he has that and she has that and I don't have it. Why? We all like to compare. But you know, the reality is the reality. We have only one life to live, right? Okay? And that's the life we're living. And we're always encouraged to dream. Dream. You know, the American dream. Yeah, it's good to dream. Because dreaming, alright, would help us, like, think, would give us a direction. What we want to achieve, what we think is good for us. It's good to dream. But you know what? Don't live in your dream. Don't live in your dream. Especially dream won't come true. The dreams that come, don't come true. Test of reality. We also have very good memories, you know, especially things that other people did to us. Oh, I got yelled at by my father. I got yelled at by Uncle Felix. Okay? We tend to remember the bad things. We don't remember the good things that people do for us. Don't look at the past. The past is gone. The bitterness, a lot of times, hurt us rather than help us. So live in the reality. Deal with reality. Accept reality. And through it, seek out. Seek out what God wants you to do. Seek out what is the will of God for you. And that we will find the right path to Him. I'll tell you one more story about John. He's a senior, so he plays lacrosse. So he's a pretty good player. So throughout, you know, for a number of years, we have been going to camps, we've been, you know, trying to talk to coaches. The problem with lacrosse, for boys especially, boys lacrosse, is there are not too many good schools who play lacrosse. So, we've identified one school, a very good school, okay, and the coach liked John a lot. We had been to that school four times. He called John July, when John was away at the Rutgers. He called him, he talked to him twice, asked John to go visit. This school is near Philadelphia, a small school. We went end of August. We went down mid August to see the school. We went to see the coach end of August. The coach invited him for an overnight visit middle of September. And then John went to the school again for a weekend for minority students early October. So throughout, even John's high school coach told us that, well, the coach is interested in John because he emailed me asking a lot of questions about John. So at our meeting with him in August, he said to us that, well, he pumped with three different goalies. And from all the reaction, we felt like we had a good shot. But then at the last day, when John was down there, the weekend for minority students, the coach talked to him. He said, John is number two choice. That he had the eye on another goalie. So on the way home, you know, we were talking about it, and I encouraged him. I said, well, that's the reality. That's the reality. You'd love to go to the school, but the coach has an eye on another player. Is that God's will for you to go to that school? We don't know. If we think so, we try to apply directly to the school. That's the reality. What are you going to do? Okay? So, we came home, and then there's another school who's been calling. The other school has better lacrosse, but not as good academics. So, I have always been lukewarm about that, because to me, academics is number one. So, I've always discouraged John, nah, don't go for a visit, it's all right. So, But the coach kept calling, so we ended up going up there 2 weeks ago. We went up there, and with no expectation. And it turned out the coach really liked John. Really liked John. Okay? So now, what are you going to do? You're going to go to this school because the lacrosse is better, but academic is not as good. Or you're going to say, well, I'm going to go to that other school even though the coach didn't really want me. I'll try to get on the team and apply. You know, that's what life is. You know, there's no right answer, I mind you. All right? This is my firm belief. I mean, theologically, someone may challenge me. All right? But I tell you, there's really no right or wrong answer. As long as your mind is, in reality, I'm faced with, I'm going to seek after God's will. And I'm going to make my decision in His will. Sometimes they match. Again, I'm not using the word right or wrong, right? Sometimes they match. Sometimes they may not match at all. Sometimes they match partially. But if we have that attitude in life, as we go on and go on and go on, chances are we're on the right path. So as long as our heart is in the right place, even if you decide one school or the other school, he's not going to know. Maybe 5 years down the road, he would know whether that's God's will for him. But all we can do is we're faced with certain realities, and we have to make the decision based on our faith and our hope, okay, to make it right in the eyes of God. And so Ruth decided, based on that reality, her hope, don't urge me to leave you or to turn back from you. Where you go, I will go. Where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people, your God, my God. This is one of my favorite verses in the Bible. Ruth said, don't urge me to leave you or to turn back from you. Where you go, I will go. Where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people. Your God, my God. Where you die, I will die. And I will be buried. That's faith. That's loyalty. That's faith in God. And that's trust in God. How does God touch your life? God touched Naomi's life, and God touched Ruth's life. And He put them through test of adversity, the test of sacrifice, and the test of reality. Alright, let me repeat. Don't run away from adversity. Alright, challenge adversity. Be aware of the test of sacrifice, because that will show that you have love in your heart, God's love in your heart. Don't think about yourself. There's too much me these days in the world. Think about the people you love. Think about the people around you. The last thing, the test of reality. Don't live in your dreams. Don't live in the past. But when you're faced with reality, try to find what is God's will for you, what's God's calling for you. We are the light that God touches. You are the light that God touches and is touching and will touch. And His purpose is to mold you. He touches your life not that you get all the good things in the world, but He touch your life in order to mold you according to His purpose. That through trials and tribulations, through joys and tears, through fulfillment and disappointment, You learn to know Him. You learn to trust Him. And it's a lifelong journey to know God.